everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush. It's just another Mini Crush Monday.
Just another Mini Monday. Why can't it be another day?
Is that where you're going with that?
No, you are the sugar in my coffee.
Oh, man.
Nice work. I didn't know if you would be hip to that.
I had a cathartic experience last night, Chuck, and thank you for acknowledging my hipsterdom, my hipdom. I saw the Muppet movie for the first time in my life.
The original Muppet movie.
And it was like pure joy. It just made me feel – I've been whistling the Rainbow Connection all morning.
Yeah. Great movie.
Really good.
I mean, imagine seeing it at whatever age I was, like 9. What year did that come out?
79, actually.
All right. I was 8. And it was just like it opened, and Josh and I talked about this on the, I believe, the Muppet or the Henson episode of Stuff You Should Know. But if you had only seen like Sesame Street and stuff like that, you had not seen the world opened up like this. And then that very first bit with Kermit in the boat, he's like opens up with him in a rowboat, right?
Is that Dom DeLuise? Who is the guy that plays the agent? I swear it looked like him, but I don't remember seeing his name in the credits.
I don't remember.
With the gold tooth. He's the guy that's like, come to Hollywood. There's an audition being held for Frogs.
Oh, I don't remember. It very well might have been.
I think it might have been.
Because that was certainly the peak Dom DeLuise time.
Yep.
I met him once when I was a little kid.
Really?
Yep. He was out at Stone Mountain Park, and we saw him walking around. And he was like, I'm positive. He was the very first famous person I'd ever met. And he signed an envelope for us and was really nice. And I just always thought that was kind of cool.
Yes, I did confirm that. He is Bernie the Agent, the guy in the rowboat in the Muppet movie. That is Dom DeLuise.
I need to see that again. It's been too long.
Well, it's like the thing that was cool for me is I'd never seen it. And so all these cameos were just pure surprises to me.
Oh, sure.
And it's like Steve Martin plays the rude waiter at the lodge. And I took my kid and we laughed and laughed.
Did it play in the theater?
Well, the Midtown Arts Cinema, our local little kind of art house theater, does a series every summer. And this one was movies about making movies.
Uh-huh.
And it was like stuff like 8½ and like Day for Night, and then they tossed the Muppet movie in there.
Nice.
Because it's totally a meta movie about making movies.
And I never really thought about that.
It was a really clever choice, and the guy did a talk, and it was just great.
What guy?
His name is Eddie Von Mueller, and he is a history, like animation historian at Georgia State.
Gotcha.
And he was actually heavily featured on the Cartoon Network collaboration podcast we did with Holly Fry, Drawn, the Story of Animation.
Plug. Right.
He was a big voice on that, far as like kind of an expert opinion.
Full circle, Noel. That's what you call that. All right. So I think what we're going to do this week is just do a couple of segments, because I always feel bad that so many people leave such great comments and questions and we don't get to them. So we're going to do some tropes and some questions, because boy, the Movie Crushers tropes thread has exploded with close to 300 tropes. And I would say easily 2/3 of those are legitimate tropes, which is not bad, you know?
No, that's pretty damn good. Yeah, that's... And I mean, I feel like we keep discovering new ones or variations on one we've discussed, but there's like the world of tropes is wide open, my friend.
It is wide open. Oh, and you know, Josh and I actually yesterday we recorded a Stuff You Should Know episode on police lineups.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about all the lineup tropes.
Of course.
That you see in TV
and
movies.
It gets parodied a lot even, you know, where there's just like every person in the lineup is some stereotype of like a particular overblown, you know, caricature of a type of criminal, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And there's something also called a show-up, which is easily, scientifically, the worst. It's not even a lineup. But you've seen it in movies. It's when they bring you to if you're the victim of a crime, they bring you to a place like where they have just fingered the guy. And they like pull him out of the police car, handcuffed, and say, "Is this the dirtbag?
Is this the guy? Is this the guy?"
That's a real thing. It's called a show up.
Wow.
And I'm like, man, there is no science to that at all.
That seems intense. You're also like probably like freshly upset, you know?
Yeah, and they pull someone out of so it's heavily weighted in your mind because they pull someone out of a police car in handcuffs.
Yeah.
So they don't appear innocent in any way.
No. Yes. Do they still do that, you think?
Yeah.
Wow.
I bet they do.
Law enforcement, man. It's got a long way to go.
All right. So let's get down to business on some of these submitted tropes. All right. Chris Walzak says, getting a vehicle or spaceship through a tight space by turning it on its side. I remember the old days, the big trick in the 70s was they would do that with cars, and you would ride on two wheels. Like they would go off the ramp, you know,
sure,
only sideways.
But I'm thinking like Millennium Falcon style, like flipping sure. sideways, going through the crevice in the Death Star and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And I would argue that maybe that movie established that as like a super cool thing that then everyone wanted to kind of do.
Yeah.
So subsequent space movies kind of started doing that.
You got to be the right shape, though. Millennium Falcon is built for that.
That's true. I mean, the flatness of that ship made that possible. But then again, like design of space movies started mimicking Star. I mean, you know, it was really like the big space movie.
Yeah. Janet James Allman. This is a good one, Janet. She says, someone is about to make a confession when the door burst open. That happens all the time, either a love confession or really any kind of confession. Or you're about to kiss. I believe we mentioned that one, and you get interrupted every time.
Of course. And they still do that. Like, because I guess it's a valuable device because it builds romantic tension, but it doesn't give you the release that you so crave.
Right.
It saves that for a little later.
Do you crave release, Noel?
I crave it daily.
Gross.
Hey, now.
Let me see here. Clinton Barrett. This is a good one. Tapping a gauge in a desperate situation and then kicking the machine while saying, work, you infernal machine, or something along those lines.
Or you damn thing.
Yeah.
Tapping the gauge is fun because it's usually like that starts to get the gauge to read correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's all you
gotta
is
do. Is that the deal?
Tap that shit.
Just tap it.
Man, did you hear any of the audio from that the guy in Seattle who took the plane?
I did. We did a little segment about it on Stuff That I Want You to Know, actually.
Fascinating to listen to that whole bit. It's like 12 minutes or so.
Yeah, he says something like he knew how to deploy the landing gear. Just for anyone who didn't know, this guy in Seattle stole a plane. He was a worker, I believe, like on the, you know, the runways.
On the ground, yeah.
Yeah, and he stole a plane. And it's not clear entirely if it was with the intent to kill himself, but what was definitely clear was it was with the intent to fly a plane.
Right.
And he knew how to do it well enough just from having played flight simulators and video games and stuff.
He flew that thing for a while.
And he did like barrel rolls and stuff. And the guys on the ground that were talking to him were like, wow, I didn't think you were going to pull that one off.
Yeah, man. It's so sad to listen to,
it
though.
Is.
It's very heartbreaking.
No, it is.
He seems like a nice kid.
But he kind of says some self-deprecatingly suicidal things.
I know,
you know?
Man.
Yeah.
Ugh,
yeah. Anyway.
Kind of painful. Sidetracking there, folks, but it made me think of tapping gauges because I bet he tapped a gauge or two.
It's true.
Let me see here. Athena Black says, I'm sitting here watching a movie and a classic trope just happened. The whole dramatically brush everything off the table trope. It's usually spontaneous sex scene or a stressed out strategic explanation or some military world-saving maneuver.
That's right. They just need a clean surface on which to accomplish some important task. Like a sex scene.
Yeah. Have you ever
a strategic military?
No. Ever raked everything off of a table?
For a strategic military planning sesh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to have sex.
Not for sex, though. No, I prefer a cushion of some kind.
Yeah. Who wants to have sex on a table?
Just crazy people in movies, Chuck.
Let me see here. Swimming for Harvey Anthony Hook. I like the name Harvey. That's a good name.
Yeah. Is it the imaginary bunny in that Jimmy Stewart movie?
Yeah. You don't hear Harvey enough anymore.
No, it's true.
Swimming for ages underwater on a single breath. Oh, boy. That's certainly the truth. Sometimes in movies like that, I'll try and hold my breath
mm-hmm.
as they're doing it mm-hmm. just to see how, you know, long I can go.
How long can you go, Chuck?
Well, not very long. It used to be better.
A minute?
Well, when I was a lifeguard, I could swim a full lap down and about a half a lap back uh-huh. underwater.
Okay.
And this was a, you know, regulation, like swim meet pool.
So that's about a minute and a half. Maybe.
It was pretty good.
It's pretty good, yeah.
There's no way I could now.
Well, me neither. But then in these movies, though, they go, not only do they not breathe, they're going crazy deep. And then by the time, like, they're running out of breath, and there's another trope, too. They're running out of breath, and they got a surface, and they're, like, you know, scrabbling to get to the surface.
Yeah.
And then the giant breath at the end of relief.
Yeah.
That's a part of that. That's a two-part trope.
All that stuff makes me nervous.
Me, too.
Okay. Jake Hale says, when blood is needed for some reason and the character cut the palm of their hand. There are many other places to cut where it wouldn't be so debilitating.
Okay. Oh, I think he's talking about maybe like a vampire scenario, you know, like an Interview with a Vampire. They often like cut their hand or bite their wrist or something like that, you know?
Okay.
When has there ever been a moment in a movie where someone gave a legit blood transfusion using a cut on their own body?
I don't think
that's how it works.
No.
So when he says when blood is needed, what are we talking about here?
I don't know. I was going to think maybe Blood Brothers, but you've got to be the hand because you shake hands.
I know.
You never did that, did you?
No.
You ever Blood Brothers?
I don't like cutting. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show. That's the thing I don't care for in movies. I don't like watching like knives throats and being slit or cuts. Yeah. I don't like it.
Which is funny because I've never broken a bone, but I've been stitched up probably 1, 2, 3, 4. I've been stitched up like 5 times in my life, but never broken a bone, including Noel. Here's a little something I don't know if anyone has ever heard. I almost bit my tongue off when I was like 10.
What, were you just like surprised or something?
No, I fell down playing soccer.
Oh, no.
And bit, you know, I think I got like 8 stitches across my tongue.
Jeez. Yeah, I've never had a stitch. Never broken a bone either.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Never had a stitch?
No, not a stitch.
Man, I cut my foot open. I cut my shin open. I cut my head open. I cut my tongue off almost.
Man, dude. Rough childhood there.
And none of them were ever cuts, though. They were from, you know, none of them were knife-related.
Yes, that's good. Then I'm okay with that.
Let me see here. Melissa Cooney, not Clooney, but Cooney, says character one finds out that character two hasn't had a certain food. Character two tries the food and is astounded because their life has been so bland without this wonder. Is that a trope?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Or has that happened once?
Well, that's the problem with some of these is like they seem so iconic, but then if you really look back through the fossil record that is movies, you might only find one instance of it. But, you know, we're not forensically researching these. We're just kind of like rattling them off. So it's possible that some of these quote-unquote tropes may have only happened once or twice.
Right.
If it's twice, is it a trope? How many times does it take to make a trope?
Oh.
5?
Jeez. Yeah, more.
At least. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I think a trope has to be in 5 movies a year.
I think that's true.
Yeah. Jameson Owsley, why can't anyone in a movie use a blender without sending its contents all over the kitchen? Okay. I suppose that's happened.
It's a good sight gag.
Bill G says, man or woman who works too much and is first introduced while on his or her cell phone. Sure. Phones are overused in movies, I think, for different things.
Yeah. For some reason, I'm picturing Jim Carrey in Liar, Liar. You know, he's like the overworked, aggressive lawyer dad, you know, who has to get his comeuppance and become a good guy. So he's always on the phone ignoring, you know, his familial duties.
Yeah, for sure. Samantha Rossetti, she says, when a character is shot and they think they're dead, but they have something tucked away in their shirt pocket that has prevented the bullet. That's a classic one.
I think we talked about this. Wait. No, I know what it was. It was in an episode of Ridiculous History where we were talking about this guy who was a Korean soldier who ended up being conscripted by like the Japanese army, the German army, and the American army. But in that story, there was a side story about the guy who played Scotty on Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
He was in World War II, and he got shot, and a cigarette case saved his life.
So really happened.
It was a real-life thing that certainly is all over the movies.
Yeah, but, yeah, I've definitely seen cigarette cases.
Yep.
Yeah,
or a Zippo, or some special keepsake that someone has just recently given you, too. That's a big one. That's a good one.
That always happens. Like, if someone, it's sort of like if you see the gun in the first act, it has to go off in the third. If someone gives you a hard metal case in the first act, it will save your life in the third.
Chekhov's case is what they call that.
Really?
No. Well, Chekhov's gun is the gun thing.
Okay.
It's like if, you know, the gun that's displayed on the mantle, it's eventually going to be used in some scene. That's Chekhov's gun, yeah.
Audrey Broatsman. Oh, this is a good one. When a few people are having a discussion and two of them step away to have the private discussion, it's always like 5 feet from the other person.
Totally.
And it's like, dude, they can totally hear you.
Absolutely. Well, it all goes back to like the Shakespearean aside, you know?
Oh, probably right.
I think maybe. It's just like the idea that it's suspending disbelief, you know?
Noel, you are bringing tremendous insight today, sir.
Hey, do my best.
Because we didn't do bong hits. Peter Griffin. Ah, Peter Griffin.
Hey, it's me, Peter Griffin from Quahog.
Knocking a rider off a motorcycle to steal it, pick up the bike, then proceeds to immediately do a wheelie as he drives away.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad, Peter Griffin.
It was fine, man. Peter Griffin's already like a bad impression of a guy from, where are they from?
I think it's like Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like that Chappaquiddick kind of Kennedy accent, you know?
Yeah. Maybe I should have done Cleveland. That wasn't bad, Cleveland.
Cleveland's good. I like that voice.
I saw that movie, Chappaquiddick, by the way, on a plane the other day.
We interviewed the director on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I wasn't there that day. But
did you get to see the movie?
I did, yeah. We saw a screener of it. I thought it was really good.
It was good, yeah.
Yeah.
It had a bit of a movie of the week quality, but a really good movie of the week.
Absolutely. No, I thought the same thing, but like it definitely like what Ed Helms is in it, and he's great.
Yeah, he's great.
The guy that plays Kennedy is fantastic, and his girlfriend.
Quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's if anyone hasn't seen that one, it didn't really make the rounds in a big way.
It was kind of under the radar.
I thought it was quite good, though.
Yeah, agreed. Boy, I'd love to see an Ed Helms do a drama like that. He was great.
Mm-hmm.
John Taylor Wesley. Yeah, this is a good one. Boy, and this is in almost every Western ever. A guy goes to a bar and just waves at the bartender, and the bartender just serves a drink, some whatever drink.
Well, I mean—
It's kind of like saying beer.
That's true.
Like, who does that?
I will say this, though. I have two neighborhood bars at which I am a regular, and they definitely know my drink, and they don't have to ask me.
All right, I'm going to guess. This is a game called Guess Noel's Bar.
Uh-huh.
I know where you live. You still live in the same place?
Well, I will give you a clue. They are more in relation to here, where we are now, than my home.
Okay.
I should make it even easier.
Well, I'm going to go with one right in this very building then and say the Mercury.
No, that's too fancy for me.
Okay.
I would go there if someone else is paying.
Geez, what bars are around here? The Righteous Room?
Yeah, the Righteous Room.
Really?
Uh-huh. That's my spot, and the Local is my spot.
Okay.
So shout out to Righteous Room and Local.
Local, I remember, had good French fries.
They have really good chicken wings, really good smoked wings.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me take you to the Local sometime, Chuck.
You know, Noel,
I know you're a family man, and I know you got stuff going on, but one day, let's do a round after work.
I still like to drink.
Well, I know that, Chuck, but I'm just saying we keep different, slightly different hours
in terms of our
office comings and goings.
Yeah, yeah. I would do that for
a lot
sure.
of times, I'll go with Ben from Stuff They Don't You Know and other folks around the office, and we'll go, tie one on after work, so.
Well, I'll tell you what. If Ben stays at home, I'll go with you. I remember when the Righteous Room opened, by the way. That's how long I've been around. It was, to me, I still think of it as one of the new bars.
I think it says on the sign.
But like it's established been around for a while now.
1998 or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was a new bar. Like when I first started going there, I was like, whoa, the Righteous Room. Mm-hmm. Like all the other bars have been here for 40 years and this one's brand new.
Yeah. No, I like it. It's my cheers.
Well, and it's right, for those of you who don't know Atlanta, we have a very classic movie theater from the 19, geez, when was the Plaza built?
Oh, it had to be the
40s or 50s?
Yeah.
20s,
yeah.
30s?
I'm bad at time math. But there's also a really cool old diner right next to it called the Majestic, and they clearly are of the same era.
Yeah, it's a very kind of throwback part of Atlanta, and the Plaza Theater is owned, I believe, by a couple who lovingly sort of restored it to a classic movie house. And they show some really good films there. And that's where you're going to see like your Rocky Horrors and The Room and stuff like that late night. But they program great movies. And The Righteous Room is right next door in this little shopping center. So you can go have a beer at The Righteous Room or whatever you please and then saunter right next door and go to see a movie. They serve booze at the movie theater too.
They do.
So you can just keep boozing it up all night long.
All night long.
And then call a Lyft because you shouldn't drive drunk.
Also true.
All right, a couple of more tropes here. David Carroll, he has a couple of them. I'll go ahead and read both. High school jocks are all violent bullies who would never respect women or be friends with non-jocks. Sure, that's a jock trope. And then stepdads are evil. Yeah, I mean, stepdads are so evil in movies. They had a horror movie called The Stepfather, and I believe they even remade that horror movie.
Oh, I remember The Stepfather. Yeah.
The guy from Lost was the stepfather.
He totally was.
That was a scary movie.
John Locke from Lost was the stepfather. That's right. Yeah, I bet it doesn't hold up if we watch it now.
Probably not.
But there was a golden time for those kind of family drama type horror movies. Remember The Good Son with Macaulay Culkin?
I didn't see that. Was he good?
He was like the evil stepson.
Yeah, yeah.
Or no, that's not true. Elijah Wood was the stepson. He was the son, and he was a bad dude.
Wait, so who was The Good Son?
Well, The Good Son was Elijah Wood, but I think it was sort of meant to be ironic because the mother thought that Macaulay Culkin was the good son, and he sort of blamed everything on Elijah Wood.
Gotcha.
But in fact, Macaulay Culkin was a little devil spawn. And speaking of Culkin, have you seen Succession yet on HBO?
No.
It is awesome.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's about a Rupert Murdoch-esque family and like the idea of like who's going to inherit, who's going to run the company. And Brian Cox is in it, who played Hannibal in the original Manhunter.
I love that.
And Kieran Culkin is in it. And it's written by the guy who wrote, he's got something to do with that director Iannucci, who did Death of Stalin and Veep and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And this guy, man, it's so good. I watched two episodes last night and I was just like hooked. So
all right. I'll check it out.
Big rec.
See, look, we're doing recommendations too, everybody. Speaking of recommendations, we also have merch now, by the way. You can get a couple of Movie Crush shirts if you want.
Yeah, I think it's tpublic.com/Movie Crush.
Yeah, why not, right? All right, we're going to finish here with some questions. These are, always ask for movie questions or just questions for Noel and I. Or for me and Noel. Isn't that how you say it?
You know, I'm still not sure.
Let me see here. All right. Ralph Spradley has this question for us, Noel. Bit of a thought experiment. Pick the war film that you, if you were fighting in a war and living it out, you would like or dislike the least to be in? Well, I just saw Platoon for this very show again for the gazillionth time. And that movie does a great, great job of really driving home how little you would have wanted to be in the Vietnam War. Wet, insect-ridden, utterly frightening, chaotic, obviously, like the D-Day invasion and mm-hmm. Private Ryan, like war is war. But I would say the Vietnam War probably for me.
Are we talking about a particular movie or?
Yeah, like pick a war film and like what war in that film, like as portrayed, would you be like, nope,
I mean like with the World War II and the first two World Wars, there's a lot of that trench warfare. It was a lot more kind of... What's the word I'm looking for? Like kind of blunt instrument warfare where it was a lot more like scrapping in the trenches and stuff like that, you know?
Like you might get bayoneted.
You might get bayoneted, and that's terrifying in its own right. But the thing about Vietnam, I think, is at least this depicted in movies like The Deer Hunter and Apocalypse Now, is sort of the psychological toll of it and the idea of it being kind of like a hopeless, pointless war where you're literally burning villages and women and children and the way you see people that are like your former buddies kind of losing their minds and, you know, becoming like the thing that you most kind of hate and fear.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that is interesting to me about Vietnam.
Interesting.
And yeah.
Bruce Olson says this, and I kind of agree with Bruce here. How come there are no more quotable lines from movies anymore? Feels like when I grew up in the 70s and 80s, almost every hit film had at least one line you would hear people saying all the time. Well, I don't have an answer for that, Bruce, but I think I kind of agree. I'm sure there are some quotable lines, but even like a movie like – I know we talk about The Hangover not a lot, but a few times in here. And that's a good example of just a huge, big monster comedy hit. And I can't think of a line from The Hangover that's super quotable.
Hey, it's The Hangover.
You know?
Okay.
Are there any big iconic lines?
Absolutely not.
I mean,
no.
Often I will say the funny line for me – I will say this a lot around the house is with me and Emily and Ruby is we're the three best friends that anyone could have.
That's good.
But that's not some iconic line.
It did not invade the mind of the zeitgeist.
No, not like a show me the money or something like that.
Yeah, or even like, you know, Big Lebowski, you know, which just was more of a sleeper hit. That's probably more quotable than
The Dude Abides.
The
maybe
Dude Abides.
One.
We believe in nothing, Lebowski.
Yeah.
We cut off your Johnson. Oh, that's not good.
That's fairly cool.
Maybe I'm just into it. Sometimes you eat the bar, sometimes the bar eats you.
Yeah, I'd say that counts as a quotable movie. But there aren't a ton of those anymore. Mm. I agree. I am super on board with that notion. Duncan Creamer says, do you ever watch a movie in bits and spurts? Yeah. There are movies where I feel like I have seen almost all of the movie, but only in bits and spurts. And it's a movie, always that I don't truly, truly care about seeing.
You know, for me, it's two. Mm-hmm. It's The Goonies and A Christmas Story.
Ah.
And I'll tell you why. It's because they get played on TV so much that over, especially A Christmas Story, because you know how every Christmas they play A Christmas Story, or maybe for years at least, on TBS here around Atlanta, I guess around the world, they used to play A Christmas Story for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think they still do.
They probably still do. But that's how I saw A Christmas Story.
Yeah,
so I'd tune in and I'd see it in reverse order. I'm still not quite sure the chronology of events in that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And similar with The Goonies, although I did watch it in one sitting with my kid recently, and I enjoyed it very much. But for a long time, I'd never seen it from front to back. I'd just seen little snippets of it on TV.
Yeah, and you know what? Going back to the quotable lines thing, I wonder if there's anything to lines being more quotable when you're younger. Like, I wonder if we were to ask a 20-year-old today about quotable lines from movies, and they would be able to fire off 10 of them from the past 5 years. I wonder if that's a young man's game.
I guess so, but I don't really think so, because it's just, like you say, it's just not – I don't – maybe it's a different intent that goes into making the movies. Maybe that's more of an old-fashioned kind of way of making movies. But it's like you think of Jurassic Park even, like, you know, clever girl and – they do move in herds, and even things like that, which seem kind of innocuous. Those were pretty quotable.
Agreed.
You got to wonder if the filmmaker's like, I want this to be super quotable.
Yeah, or like when the screenwriter writes a line, they're like, oh yeah, this is going to be one of those lines. Mm-hmm. Maybe. You shouldn't try to write that way, though.
It doesn't seem like you should. No, it seems like that would be very forced.
Kevin Harris says, you know how George Lucas went back and changed Star Wars movies? Including new scenes. I'm not a fan of what he did, but I do like the idea for less popular movies. Instead of remakes, I think studios should commission a different director to go back and fix movies that flopped. Well, Kevin, I do not agree at all with that statement. I see where you're going, and I respect your opinion, sir, but I don't like the idea of going back and trying to fix a movie. I don't see the point. You release it out there in the world. That's your best effort. Just let it be, is what I say. Let's do a couple more here. Joe Smith says, what is a movie you enjoy that really isn't very good, but you enjoy it because you love the source material so much? For me, it was Constantine. That is Joe Smith. You know what comes to mind is the Watchmen movie.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, even though the source material just is so much greater than the movie ended up being. But I think we were maybe on slightly different sides of that argument. You enjoyed the movie quite a lot, right?
Well, no, I don't think it was that great.
Okay.
I kind of liked it, but I think it qualifies for his question because I loved the graphic novel so much.
So you're saying you think it made you give the movie a pass a little bit? Or?
A little bit more of a pass. I was so ready to love the Watchmen movie. And I think they did a good job in a lot of ways. But, yeah, in the end, it just, I don't know. It's tough.
They didn't have the giant squid attacking the city. I mean, you know,
yeah,
come on.
That's right.
You know, it just got greenlit for a series on HBO.
Yeah, they just shot that here in Atlanta.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yes, sir.
So you've been knowing about this for a minute, and you were holding out on me, Chuck?
I have known about this for a minute. I had friends that worked on it.
I think the thing with me and Watchmen is the book is so good that I think I was prepared for the movie to not be good, and it was actually a little better than I expected it to be, but still not as good as the book.
Yeah, I hear you. Such a good graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And I don't read graphic novels. That's one of the few I've read.
I guess that's the one. I mean, if you're going to read one, that's definitely one of them.
And all right, let's finish up with this. Tim Vandenhoek says, Chuck, on your other show, I suppose he's talking about stuff you should know, you mentioned you have a list, a selection of directors who have never made a bad movie. Yeah, the 100% Club. I've talked about it before.
Cool.
He said, I remember Sofia Coppola on the list. I think that I made that statement before I saw her most recent one, the What was it called?
Oh, it was the one.
It was a remake of the movie that had Clint Eastwood in it as the wounded Civil War soldier who's taken in by a house full of women. And it was okay.
The Beguiled.
Yeah, The Beguiled. It was all right. But that definitely dinged her armor a little bit for me. Otherwise, I think Sofia Coppola has made pretty much great movies. I think Wes Anderson is in that group. I've talked about the Coen brothers with a slight ding on the Tom Hanks movie that I didn't think was great.
The Lady Killers?
Yeah. Did you like that?
I mean, it's fun. If you watch it again and don't like try to hold it up to the Coen brothers canon, it's right. A fun little movie.
Yeah. So like their worst movie is probably that movie and it's not that bad.
Yeah.
So they're in that group. And of course, Alexander Payne to me, absolutely 100% club, P.T. Anderson. And he says, how would you rate David Fincher? He said, aside from Alien 3, which is probably beyond his control, his worst film is probably Panic Room, which is still pretty good. You know what? I'm going to put Fincher up there for sure. As I look through his repertoire, Gone Girl I thought was really good. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was great. Social Network was great. Oh, you know what? Benjamin Button, I didn't really like that movie that much.
No, that was a...
So he's not 100% club.
We talked about this the other day because that was one of those movies that got passed around to a bunch of different directors, I think. And
Really?
Yeah, I remember that segment we did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
About movies that were...
Tag teams?
They were offered to people and then passed.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, and...
Almost famous.
I think Benjamin Button was one that like almost all of the big directors on the list had been offered at some point and ultimately Fincher got it, which I thought was an odd choice considering that it wasn't really like anything else he'd done and it also wasn't particularly good.
Yeah. That's my only ding in his armor though because Zodiac is a masterpiece to me.
I agree.
I did like Panic Room. I thought it was pretty good. Fight Club, of course, is great. The Game, very, very good movie.
Yeah, people. I think we've talked about this. People rag on Fight Club that it doesn't hold up. And I would beg to differ. I think it was a movie for its time. And it certainly showcases a lot of toxic masculinity that's very much not in vogue right now. But I think that it knows that's what it's doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Seven, great movie. Alien 3, again, not great. But our listener here gives that one a pass. And then, boy, he did a lot of Paula Abdul videos. Looking at his list.
He did a lot of Madonna videos, too.
Yeah, I didn't realize this. He did, I mean, he goes back to the 80s with Rick Springfield videos, for Christ's sake. But yeah, Fincher overall, I give him, and I enjoyed the Mindhunter TV series. Did not watch House of Cards. Did you watch that?
No, I didn't. And you know what? I really liked Mindhunter, and I watched at least the first three episodes, but for some reason, I did not continue. And that happens to me from time to time.
Mindhunter?
Mindhunter. And it's not a ding on the show, necessarily. I think it's just like a testament to the clutter that is my mind.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just kind of like fall off of things
or it gets replaced, you know?
But I really did like Mindhunter. I thought it was more understated than I was expecting it to be. It kind of was like a TV show version of Zodiac in some ways, in terms of like the tone and
they totally set it up to where you think like, oh man, this is a serial killer show, and it is not as thrilling as that. It's a much more cerebral show about this dude, this Mindhunter detective. I like it. I can't wait for season two.
I'll finish it.
Yeah. All right. We're going to finish up with that, everybody. Thanks for listening. Your homework for this week. We continue with the Friends and Family editions with my very good pal that you heard on the pre-Oscar special. I think it was the pre with my friend Scott Ippolito. He is a director of photography and a camera operator, and he also writes on the side. Scotty and I have written things together as screenwriting partners. And he is an old, old friend and one of my besties, one of my brothers. And he chose Close Encounters of the Third Kind as his favorite film. He tossed around some really good ideas from E.T. to Chinatown, which was nabbed by our mutual buddy from last week, Chad Crowley. So he went with Close Encounters. Can't wait. I'm going to watch it this weekend. And Scott and I are going to sit down and talk next week. And we're going to keep doing some more Friends and Family. I'm going to get Noel and Emily in here and maybe even my brother if he agrees. And so look forward to those. We're going to intersperse those along with the regular guests that we're going to book. And I hope that's okay with you guys. I think it's kind of fun. So thanks for listening. And until next week, Noel, you want to say goodnight?
Oh, man, I guess I'll do it. It's not really nighttime, though. It's pretty early still. But good day.